Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, high atop the radio world in the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in downtown Portland, Oregon. And we welcome all of our affiliates here on the Radio Northwest Network. And for those of you who have a question about this, Camaro Dave is out on the selfie circuit. Today, we've got my dear friend, the Galloping Gourmet. Graham Kerr is with us today. We're going to be talking about a reissuance of a old book that's coming out as a new book. We're going to be talking about that and some things to do to cook and to prepare out of your garden, of all things. I know that doesn't sound like your normal throw a rack of ribs on the grill, but Graham's always got some interesting things to talk with us about. And in honor of Graham, I thought I would keep it kind of an all-British show. So we've got our music today is from Adele. So how about that? And this portion of Barbecue Nation is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef from the heart of the Pacific Northwest. Beef you can feel about serving your family and friends. And so here we go. Graham, welcome.
Hey, Jeff, I am thrilled to be back again. This is wonderful.
You know, we talk a number of times a year when we're not on the radio, and I'm going to confess something to you. And okay. the story goes, and if anybody's ever read my bio, you were the person that inspired me to take my cooking to a different level. And that was back when I was about 12, 13 years old. And every time I dial your phone number, I still get kind of a, this guy's my hero deal in my head. So,
That's fine. I don't rip my shirt open anymore to reveal a big S, you know.
It's all good. It's all good. So how have you been?
I am suspiciously well. I simply suffer from a right eye, which occasionally, when I get a little tired, twitches. Now, you know, I'm nearly 85, so I don't take any medication. I've never taken a supplement except for 2 weeks during a very wet winter recently where I tried vitamin D and it didn't seem to work. So, you know, all I can say is what I've eaten is keeping me alive and reasonably well. Thank you.
Well, and you've eaten some of the best food and prepared some of the best food in the world, so I'm with you all the way on that. I really am.
Well, you know, there is, I think, Jeff, a degree to which I overate some of the best food in the world. They used to call that the high priest of hedonism, yeah. I was referred to as. So I think I compensated for that about midway through and learned my lesson. So I'm grateful.
Well, you know, you were younger. You were right in the middle of things, so to speak. You and Trina were doing all kinds of phenomenal things, you know, outside of your own kitchen at home. So, you know, you were around the world and you were eating and cooking and entertaining and I think you came out well on the other side of that.
Thanks so much. Yeah, well, I can tell you that there was never a moment in my life with food that I wasn't totally devoted to that stage that I was at that time. So, you know, as you said in your introduction, this old book, which is now 52 years old, has been reissued. I read through the whole book because they asked me to make notes on pages, so, you know, to bring it up to date. And I am actually amazed at hearing myself 52 years ago enthusiastically engaged with that style of cooking at that time. And to find I'm still engaged in that style of cooking, it's only the portion sizes that have really changed. And so I've actually been smiling and chuckling to myself as I've read through it. And it sounds a bit self-indulgent, but there we are.
There, it's quite all right. And I will tell you, that is the first cookbook I ever bought. And I told you that.
Really,
off the, yeah, yeah. And that is the first cookbook, and I have hundreds now, literally. But that was the first cookbook. The book jacket is a little dog-eared and frayed and all of that. But it is... It is
good.
Yeah, it is where we, you know, clarified butter came from and a lot of things.
That's true.
A country boy from Estacada, Oregon, did not have an idea in hell what clarified butter was, but you taught me.
Okay. And there was a stage in my life that I didn't either. And so life is a continual unfolding, isn't it, my friend?
Yep. Yes, it is. So tell us, you know, we've got a few minutes here. So tell us, what have you changed or made additions to the book?
Okay, well, there's just 10 points. So if your wonderful listeners are there with pencil poised and ready for the new back ribs recipe, I'm sorry for that, you guys, but write 1 through 10, and I'll give you, and I'm sure Jeff will challenge me on each one. So, number one, I simply reduce the meat portions as I set them up at the time by 50%.
Okay.
And that sounds like a lot, but in those days, meat portions, say for a stew, was 8 ounces of meat per person.
Mm-hmm.
So we've simply taken it from 8 to 4, and I find that a good stew can easily be made with 4 ounces per person.
Sure.
So you, if a four person, you know, you've got a pound of good chuck, beef, and it does well. It just means that you have a little more vegetable in it than you had in the past, and that's the switch. So that was the number one. Number two was that I added my favorite fresh vegetables to take up the space on the plate. You know, so that, and obviously, if you're gonna take a 16-ounce, New York cut, you know, sirloin mm-hmm. steak, and you just simply reduce that by 50%, then you've got an 8-ounce steak. If you used to have an 8-ounce, then you take it down to 4. And when you do that, it is suspicious because you look down at your plate and you say to yourself, I really like a good steak, and this looks mean. You know, you're just so used to measuring things that it looks mean. And you remember we had a politician who once said, you know, where's the meat?
Right.
Or where's the beef, I think it was. So... what I did, I simply reduced the size, and then I took my favorite vegetables, and I placed those on the plate to take up the space that had been vacated. Now, I want to highlight the word favorite, because if you like a good beefsteak tomato, and you can grill that on the surface and put a little bit of Parmesan cheese perhaps on the top of that, or some fresh chopped basil and salt and pepper, and you just grill it until the whole thing is just caramelized on the surface and just beautiful, and you slip that onto the plate alongside the steak. And if you love broccoli, or if you love kale, if you love spinach, whatever it is that you really love, you take a good portion of that and place that on the plate as well. Now, all of a sudden, because you love those additions
mm-hmm.
at the same passion that you love your steak, you now eat the steak with foods that are genuinely part of your life and that you enjoy.
That's perfect.
And it's a wonderful meal. You're not losing on it. really.
No, you're not. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with 3 through 10 with Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet, right after this.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet to go over everything. They say the time's supposed to heal ya, but I ain't done much healing. Hello, can you hear me? I'm in California dreaming.
Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with Dr. Dave, was around doing something, and my good friend Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet, is with us today. If you would like to email us, if you ever have a question or comment, it's BBQ Nation. That's Barbecue Nation with the letters BBQ Nation at alphamediausa.com. Also, if you'd like to send us a recipe, because sometimes people send me recipes and I send them little prizes out of our gift closet, it's recipes at alphamediausa.com. USA.com. Say hi to a couple of our affiliates. It's KVI in Seattle, 570, and KPNW down in Eugene. We thank you for being on our network. Now let's talk with Graham Kerr again, the Galloping Gourmet, the guy who really, and I don't want to make this sappy sounding, but the guy who really inspired me to start cooking years and years ago. And we didn't meet until, oh, I don't know, 4 years ago or so. But, you know, I always followed your career, followed your books, have all your books, and there you go. You just, the reason I think I liked you so much, Graham, is because you were always having fun.
Well, that's true. And, you know, when you think that, when you watch that, that was one episode in the contract that I had for 650. And I used to have to do 195 new shows every year. And that meant traveling somewhere in the world, finding the dish, filming it, bringing it home, testing it and developing it, writing up a method of being able to organize the thing on television in, mm-hmm. you know, within 21 minutes. And that used to take me personally 19 and a half hours. To do each one of those.
Yeah.
So I looked like I was having fun. You darn right. I was in the last half an hour of that 19 and a half hours. I was real close to the finish line. And when I got people out of the audience to come and eat the food that I was eating, that memory of going all the way back to Russia or China or wherever it was that we got the dish and all the work that came onto that plate at that time, and they liked it. It was one of the most wonderful feelings of my whole life.
Oh,
at that time when I served it to other people. Yeah.
You know, I can tell you just for myself and the television work that I do, when you see somebody take a bite of a dish that you prepared and they turn and look at you and smile with this very radiant, you know, they love it. It's got great flavor, texture, all those good things we strive for. I mean, that just is kind of like, you could say, hey, you won the lottery. Here's $1 million. And it's like, yeah,
exactly.
Okay, but this other thing's better. Yeah.
Exactly right. I still rejoice over that. It's just wonderful. So anyway, so we were at number 3.
That is correct.
Okay, so we reduced the saturated fat level, and I know you and I could chat on this for hours, but any fat, if somebody doesn't know what saturated is, it just means that the fat that I reduced was the fat that if you melt it, and it just goes liquid, and then you leave it to go cold, it will go solid.
Mm-hmm.
So that would mean coconut does that, and all animal fats do that, obviously. But butter is just simply solidified in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just reduced that to 3 ounces of consumption per day. And that would allow my saturated fat to be around about 10% of the fat that I had in any one day. And I actually made sure that I got some reasonably good beneficial fats to add to that. So it doesn't mean it's not fat-free. It's fat change from that which goes solid to that which remains liquid, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
And I actually removed butter. That was hard.
Well, come on.
You know, when you take a nice piece of toast and you put some butter on the top of it and maybe some marmalade and have that with a cup of tea, my God, man, that's what the British Empire was built on and lost.
Yes.
So it wasn't easy, but I found there's, things like New Balance made with olive oil is a very interesting New Balance and then Earth Balance and Smart Balance and Earth Balance. Those two things are spreads which have which after a while you don't really remember what butter tasted like, and this really does provide a textural change. So that's what I did. I just simply trimmed some of the extra fat off meat, but not all of it, That's been helpful. Then what we did, we kept using a small amount of cheese. I really, really like cheese. And it just meant that for my wife, Trina, who had, really serious cholesterol problems, her total cholesterol was 365. Ooh. And she had something called little A apoprotein, which means it's very, very fine particles of cholesterol. And this adheres very easily to the arteries. And that was her problem. She inherited that within her family. And when you have that, you really, really need to watch the amount of saturated fat that you eat in a day. And if you keep it to 3 ounces or less, there's a good chance that you'll do much better than otherwise.
That's
why I'd like to ask any of your listeners at the moment, just by chance that you're listening to Jeff at the moment, or by habit because you love him, understand that both of us care about you, and that it would be lovely if we were to spill out some of our thoughts and understandings to be able to touch your life as an individual.
Sure.
And so please just go and get a blood test and ask them little A apoprotein, little A. Just say, I want to check my little A apoproteins, you see, and it's an inexpensive test, and they'll find out whether you've got the fine stuff or not. Then you can take some actions.
We're gonna take another break, and we're gonna come back and wrap up our numerical change to Graham's book. And I bless you for giving my listeners that advice, because that's really good. But we'll be back on Barbecue Nation with Graham Kerr right after this.
Everybody loves the things you do. From the way it
there's a fire starting in my Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with Dr. Dave, and my good friend Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet, is with us today. This portion of Barbecue Nation is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. From the heart of the Pacific Northwest comes a beef product you can feel good about. And also, portions of this segment are brought to you by Barclays Buy Sell Pond, my good friend Mark Stout, down in Woodburn. I went over to his store yesterday to look at some things, and he has a Dan Electro 12-string electric guitar. I'd actually never seen one. Anyway, he's got one there. You might want to check it out on his website at Barclays.com, and it's about a third of the price reduced on that, but it's a Dan Electro 12-string electric guitar. Anyway, for those of you who are into such things, and if you'd like to email us again, it's barbecuenation@alphamediausa.com. Now back to Graham. As we were talking when we went to break there, Graham, I am going to get that test done, and I recommend that all my listeners, next time they go to the Sawbones, get that little A test done for them. It'll help them out.
Wonderful. Good. That's good news. Okay, let me but go through these other ones
Sure. Pretty
quickly. I replaced cream and used a strained, low-fat, plain yogurt with a little cornstarch added to it in place of cream. And that's a technique which I've done quite a lot of work on, and it's quite simple, and it would take a little bit more time than I've got at the moment to get into the detail, but that's what we did. So we took clarified butter out and used olive oil in its place. We kept all the beneficial fats, olive oil, fatty fish, nuts, seeds, avocado, all of that stayed in place because it's really important for the flavor of food.
Mm-hmm.
All of our grains and seeds and legumes and all of that sort of thing, they all became whole and organic. And we aimed at consuming about 7 to 9 servings of vegetables and fruits a day. And a serving is about 100 grams, which is about 3.5 ounces, about a half a cup.
Mm-hmm.
So 7 by half cupfuls. It sounds like an awful lot, but really spread out over the day. If you do spread it out over the day, it's really quite easy to achieve. And we gave up carbonated and sweetened beverages and drank water for the most part. And a glass of wine a day is fine. 2 for a man, 1 for a woman. There's no such thing as justice. And yet, you know, beyond that, there are some people who can easily handle it and some people who can't. So it's just a wise thing to wonder about. And finally, what we saved, and we did save. I mean, I look back now over about 34 years of saving by making these changes in my food budget.
Mm-hmm.
And my estimate of saving now is $127,000 that I have saved on my food with those changes that I just talked about. And now I took half of that money and reinvested it in my food budget so as to buy better fruits and better vegetables and better, higher quality. But the other half, which is, you know, roughly about $60,000, we found very good reasons for giving to organizations that were caring about other people.
Mm-hmm.
So that now I'm a Christian, so obviously I would look first for people who are doing what I call a both-hand job. They have the hand to present the gospel message of Jesus, and that's what they should be doing. If they're receiving funds for that, then they must do that. That's only ethical and heartfelt. The other hand, however, is humanitarian to all intents and purposes. They're feeding people. They're helping agriculture. They're doing wonderful water systems all over the world. And I wanted to see both of those things taking place at the same time. So we've invested in that kind of process. And so I know that this world has changed for the better because that portion of my food that I reduced to reduce the risk to me was converted into a resource that can help other people. And I think that's what the Americans are about. We really care about our neighbors. And now, at the present moment, it makes it look as if we only care about jobs and, you know, whatever else it may be that has a dollar sign to it. But truly, I think when we're really pushed, the thing that we are most concerned about is our neighbor's benefit. And that is something we mustn't ever lose.
I know growing up on a small ranch, farm, whatever you want to call it, and there were always people willing to help. your neighbors. If you had a fence that was broken down by a storm, tree fell on your fencing, neighbor would stop by and help you. Didn't really have to ask them. They would just do it. If your car broke down, or if you had a sick or injured animal, or if somebody passed away, the neighborhood got together and cooked food for you, and, you know, those kinds of things. Yeah. And I'm not sure we see too much of that with how spread out and how many people we have these days. I'm pretty sure we still see it in some of the smaller, more rural communities. But in the big suburbs, I'm not sure that we see enough of that anymore.
I don't honestly think, from my understanding, and I've been doing some research recently of this one, because I have a passion for food that extends beyond my years. I'm really interested in one big deal. How many children sit down for supper with their parents? I know it may have been glorified in the past, you know, with the TV programs where we'd see the family sitting together around the table. And that may not have been as often as we would like to think it was, but it did happen. Mum used to be at home. That is so seldom nowadays. And I hear from my younger friends, you know, teenagers, that they may eat once or twice a week with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something, Jeff, I hate to sound like just an old codger who's upset about something, but honestly, that is such an important bonding experience of a family around a table and eating together and sharing life together. I can't imagine what that can do if it's gone.
I can tell you that let me interrupt you for a second. Earlier this year, we went up to Ocean Park, which is, for those of you who don't live in this close area here, it's on the Southwest Washington coast. And it was a memorial service for my father-in-law, who passed away last December. And so by the time everybody could get there and the weather was okay, because we were doing an outdoor kind of remembrance thing for me, that was fine. And we all stayed in this one house. We rented a house for the sisters, my wife, her two sisters, and her brother to stay in. And they're all great people. We had a good time. But I noticed a couple of times, and these are people that grew up in my generation, that even those people were sitting there looking at their phones while they're eating.
oh no.
And I was like, there's nothing that important this weekend that you guys have to have your nose buried in your phones, this is your family, and you won't see some of these people for another 2 or 3 years. Anyway, that's just an observation on my part, but I thought it was kind of a sad, statement, really, that.
Yeah. Yes. I've been told that most kids will get to their room and take out their iPhone and call their friends or watch something on their own individual television or screen, whatever they have. Mm-hmm. And we're so over-communicating with each other nowadays by electronics that I think we're lacking this business of actually meeting each other and looking into each other's eyes and caring about each other, just observing another person's life.
Yes.
Other than what we're prepared to put on the screen.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and wrap up the show with Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet, and we've learned a lot today, and we're going to learn a little more right after this. There's a Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I am JT, along with Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet. As we speak, the Kansas City Royal is going on this weekend, so we'll be having some of the winners of that coming up in the next few weeks. Those guys are always fun. And in the KCBS Hall of Fame this year, they're inducting Tuffy Stone, Tootsie Tomanitz, and Charlie Vergos. So for those of you who follow competitive barbecue, there's your Hall of Fame crew this week. And speaking of Hall of Fame, here is a man that is in the world's Hall of Fame of cooking. My buddy, Graham Kerr. Hey, what's the biggest thing you think you've learned when you were reworking your book?
Well, you know, I think it's got to be how much I enjoyed so many dishes that I've received over all of these years. You know, I've done 1,800 television programs alone and written 31 books. So obviously I have tasted and prepared a great deal of food over the time. If I go to the things that I have valued the most, I would say they were the least complicated. And I've almost come up with a little phrase, food least handled is best liked. I don't know anything more wonderful than a simple stew or a barbecued piece of back rib, you know, that is well basted. It is just so special. I'm preparing a meal for the two entrepreneurs who discovered my book and called it one of the top 10 cookbooks ever written. They're the ones who put this on the market for me. And I'm taking a dish, a very simple lamb dish, out of that one and serving it to them. And I am so grateful for simplicity, honestly. You know, when you're followed by a reasonably large audience of people, they're wanting to see something new and special, and people are still trying to get new and special. The truth of the matter is, awfully, to come to the end of a career and say that the simplest is the best. That's what I've learned.
I think you're right. I mean, my career hasn't been as long as yours, obviously, but I have come to the conclusion that the simpler things, especially the simpler things I'm doing on television from time to time, when I make the recipes too complicated, the finish plate or the hero shot or whatever you want to call it may look great. But then you have to figure out that your audience at home, most people aren't going to do that.
So is it a performance or are you actually providing a service? And
yes. That's
what I tried to do with this book. This book has 72 basic methods of cooking done by the most simple list of ingredients possible for each one of those 72 methods. And then it extends it and makes it a little more complicated and then extends it once again so that it becomes a real challenge. But it's still using the same basic method. And I think when we understand what basic methods are and the best way of getting to them, then I think that it's really just a question of our own individual choice of ingredients that we like, and you put that together, and then you are your own cook.
Yes.
You don't have to follow a recipe in detail because you know how it works. You just change the ingredients.
I kind of tell people now, when people talk to me about things, and you've probably had this a lot more than I have, and we've only got a 30 seconds left here. I tell them to use it more as a guideline. You know, if you're cooking beef in a vegetable dish or whatever, you can change that up, but you just use learn how to cook the basics, and then you can kind of do what you want.
Absolutely. And the problem is that there may be out there in the web at the present moment, 20 different ways of methods of creating a stew, all of which may work from one point to the other. But if you're doing different people's recipes, you're always relearning the basics and never really knowing your own way of doing the basics.
That's
know your own, know mother's or grandmother's method, and then stick to it.
That's right. Graham Kerr, my dear friend, thank you for being on us, the Barbecue Nation, today. As usual, I had a tremendous time with you.
Thank you. I always enjoy it. And thank you for introducing me to Huckleberry Jam. I mean, it changed my life.
Oh, yep, there you go. There you go. We're going to get out of here. Graham and I are going to keep talking, but you guys got to go. So remember our saying around here, turn it, don't burn it. You can check out more of my stuff on thecowboycook.com. And from everybody here at The Nation, we will see you next week. Take care, everybody.